Well, basically, it's like it sets you up so you can love, you can love or hate, whichever of these talking heads, just so you can see them exalt or eat their own butts. You know, on election night when one has to win and one has to lose.
Okay, we're live on the audio.
That's so funny. It's still. On video, are we live?
No, we're not.
Oh no, just
not
audio.
I'm about to make us live on video right now. Hey, look at that. It worked. Everything is falling into place. So we got a couple of minutes before we actually start the show. Any last minute questions, concerns?
Did you try to just bring one of those hot plates out and start selling street meat to the Snapchat spectacles line?
Man, I should have. There were plenty of other Venice Beach denizens out there performing, selling, hawking things.
Do people still hawk CDs?
You know, I didn't see any CDs. I still saw books, though.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you are in line to spend $130 on a product that will not last throughout the year, definitely have some income willing to burn.
It's not like a shirt.
No, listen, this thing will last. This thing will certainly last for far longer than the Snapchat spectacles will.
Definitely, yes.
I hope.
All right, I am going to hide.
All righty.
It was actually described to me that it does kind of look, now the more that I look at it, it does, the pattern does look like a Dixie napkin.
That's
I don't know whether or not that makes me very happy or very sad.
People pay big money for that. Roger, I want to make sure you see there on line 13 is the video that I shot of the Snapchat line. I imagine you would already notice that, but I just want to make sure you knew. All right, we ready?
Yup.
Let's do this. Here we go.
Quality content thrives through the support of those who benefit from its creation. If you gain value from the Daily Tech News Show, consider joining others like me who provide support. Learn how to help at dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, November 10th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today, as he does on most Thursdays, Mr. Justin Robert Young of the Politics, Weird Things, Night Attack, among many other podcasts. How's it going, Justin?
And veteran of our 8-hour live coverage.
Is it 8 hours in the end? I didn't do all 8 hours, but you went wire to wire with it.
I went wire to wire with it. You were there for the vast majority of it, and I was very excited to have you there with us. Obviously, a historic night for many different reasons, as I'm sure many smarter and wiser and more daring people have enumerated between then and now. But I'm very happy to be back to normal talking about tech news.
Yeah, in fact, we are going to talk about an election, not the presidential election, but there were several ballot initiatives regarding municipal networks, and we're going to bring Chris Mitchell, director of the Community Broadband Networks Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. You can find his work at muninetworks.org on the show. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, hey, thrilled to be well, good talk to you.
Yeah, good to have you back. Chris is going to be kind enough to hang out and talk some tech news with us, so we'll get to talking about those ballot initiatives in a little bit. First, you should know Google's new Daydream VR headset went on sale today, and a new YouTube VR app came along with it. By the way, if you're a fan of cardboard, those cardboard apps need to be updated before they'll work on Daydream VR. They don't just translate right over. Blizzard is making Overwatch available to try out for free the weekend of November 18th. This is an incredibly popular game, and they want it to be even more popular. I don't know. Now, here are some more top stories. Snap Incorporated, which is the name of the company that makes Snapchat now, has started putting out vending machines to sell its $129 Spectacles product. Spectacles is a pair of sunglasses with a video camera designed to be used with Snapchat. It doesn't do live streaming video. It just takes snaps. Use a credit or a debit card at this vending machine, and then you get to choose black, coral, or teal spectacles. First vending machine appeared in the Abbott Kinney area near Snap's headquarters in Venice Beach. They call the vending machines Snapbots, and they're going to move it to a new location each day. So far, this one in LA is the only one that's out there.
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing that when you look at what's happening with these spectacles is you're going to compare it in success to Google Glass, right? Like that's the biggest thing that we're going to think of when we see whether or not this is a success or a failure, right?
That's the natural comparison, absolutely.
And if that's the case, then I think they're making a very good decision. They are effectively restricting access to them to the point where they can announce any number, and we're going to say, well, all right, that seems like people have spent money on it. Right now, there are gigantic lines to buy them out of these vending machines. And Tom, you did a little shoe leather on the ground reporting for this.
Yeah, I figured, oh, you know what? I live not too far from there. I'm going to hop in the car. I'm going to take a little gander at this vending machine. Maybe I'll pop $129 out of the old Patreon funds to try one out. First of all, their map would not let me zoom in. So I did it at home. It worked fine. But when I was on my phone, for some reason, the Google map they were using wouldn't let me zoom in. So it took me about a half hour to find it. There were some Snapchat folks out on the street giving directions. And then once I actually got there, that line was a couple hours long. It went in through the parking lot, around the corner, and down the street. So you had to figure out where this thing was, go find the right parking lot, and then stand in a huge long line, and people were doing it.
How many spectacles do you think were in that box?
Well, I wondered about that. Okay, so this thing is about four or five blocks from Snapchat's headquarters. I imagine they know exactly how many are in that box, and then if they were going to get to a point where it was running low, they just run back to the mothership and refill that thing pretty quickly.
So you think Evan Spiegel has like a gray shirt, a gray button-down shirt with his name on it that he just like, I'm sorry, guys, opens it up with his little skeleton key and throws some
Hold on there,
in.
Folks. Let me just refill the old vending machine. Yeah, I have no idea.
Clears out the loose change thing, puts it in a burlap sack, goes back to the HQ.
It was purest hubris for me to think, oh, I'll just wander up and stand in a short line and get one of these. Nobody will know about it because this is the Silicon Beach area, right, where Snapchat is. So, of course, it had everybody who was interested in these things out to get one. Let me ask Chris, if you were nearby, would you have stood in a line to get these spectacles?
Oh, definitely not. You know, my biggest question was if they had like a ton of the black ones sitting in there and they had to replace just one of the other colors. You know, I'm very curious if people are willing to settle after waiting in line that long, or if they, you know, if they said, "No, I'll come back tomorrow and I can get the color I want."
Not only come back tomorrow, but try to hunt to find where you move it tomorrow, because my guess is they're going to move it over to like Hollywood or Beverly Hills or somewhere like that. And I'm curious if these things are going to start showing up in other cities as well.
I would certainly guess that they are. And just to compare it to what Google Glass did, for those who don't remember, they almost went the exact opposite. Sure, you had to apply for a program, right? So they artificially restricted access that way. But once you had the opportunity to buy them, they gave you almost like a luxury car experience where they let you sit down and they would give you the beer or soda of your choice. They would have somebody walk you through all the features. They really, really, really wanted to explain to you how. This seems like a smarter gambit for Snapchat, wherein they say, listen, we're selling it out of a vending machine. And then if you like it, you like it. But they did not give these, unless, correct me if I'm wrong, they didn't give these to tech bloggers. They didn't give these to tech reps. They didn't give these to The Verge. They're just saying, no, we're connecting directly with our audience. And if you have $130 burning a hole in your pocket, come on down and wait in a line to come get it.
You know, that's a good question. I have seen some bloggers talking about using them. But you may be right that they didn't get to keep them. They may have gotten to use them in a controlled situation to try them out. Big Jim was asking earlier if it was tech journalists in that line. I didn't recognize anybody. But at the time, I was like, no, I think they probably got them sent directly to them. But maybe they didn't.
I mean, maybe. I think I saw some line reporting by Ashley Escada from CNET. But other than that, I think those were the only two. You and her were the only ones I saw in my Twitter feed reporting in line.
I didn't actually see her out there. That's funny. All right. Tell us what Instagram is doing to imitate Snapchat today. Did they come up with their own minion-looking vending machine?
Not quite. Instagram added three new features Thursday to its Snapchat-like stories function. Users can now add links that open a page within the app on a See More prompt. You can type at replies for up to 10 accounts that can be tapped to open the user's profile, and the ability to add one-second looped boomerang videos to stories without having to leave the Instagram app. Links is only available to verified users right now, meaning you would assume that they are more ways that you can mollify brands and celebrities that want to push branded content.
Yeah, it seems like that. I think the at replies is just a way to give shout outs to people, maybe expose folks to some more discovery options. The boomerang thing is the most interesting to me because that is something that is entirely different from Snapchat. And it is something that Instagram has as a separate app. And in fact, if you want to put a boomerang video in your main Instagram timeline, you still have to go to the boomerang app, make it, and then import it into Instagram. Whereas if you want to put it in stories, you just pop it right in. So that's a little bit of an odd implementation of it.
Do you want to know what this reminded me of? Is that we were talking last week or 2 weeks ago when Twitter shut Vine down, that the question is, how does Vine just get shut down and not at least before that folded into Twitter? That you can just slide, you know, in the options you have to shoot video, a Vine is one of them, or maybe the default option. And this to me, because Instagram's done a few of these apps between the time lapse and Boomerang, these standalone apps that you can then fold in, that maybe the smart thing for Instagram is whether you're not seeing the growth that you want in these apps in particular, maybe fold them into the main product before you just shut them down.
Yeah. Do you use Instagram for much, Chris?
Yeah, I actually do sports photography for the University of Minnesota. Some other clients, I run a small business actually that deals with it. And my biggest problem is that I'm just, you know, it's hard to go from my computer to Instagram and I have to like put it in Dropbox and get it over. So I tend not to use it as much, but I regret it. You know, for me, the long-term, the issue that I have with these products is that I just get frustrated. They have to keep growing, right? Like I love Twitter. I love using Twitter, but there's a sense that it has to conquer the world or die. Same thing with Vines. And with Instagram, at least they have the backing of Facebook. So maybe we won't have that issue. But, you know, that's the issue that I see is that it feels like I can't get used to any of these tools because they either have to change or they're going to disappear. Either way, you can't have any constancy.
Yeah, we talked about that a bit, that sort of like, can anybody make a successful business model and maintain investment with a sustainable audience instead of a growing audience? PayPal's not one of them, though. They want to grow. They want to make more money. They're updating the iOS app to let people use Siri to send and request money in 30 countries. So once you get the update, you just tell Siri, hey, send $50 to Justin Robert Young. Or you can say, hey, request Justin Robert Young. Give me $50 for the pizza that I bought him. That's a really expensive pizza. You'll have to confirm your identity with Touch ID before Siri will actually move your money around. So somebody can't just pick up your phone and start willy-nilly sending money by talking to Siri. And the recipient of the money or the person you're requesting it from must have an email address linked to PayPal, and that email address has to be in your contacts.
So useful in a world where everything is going the way that PayPal wants it to go, but still something that is probably a little ways away from being ubiquitous. It is interesting to see that PayPal is taking Touch ID very seriously. Now anybody with Touch ID can log into their PayPal account from their browser after they have already logged in on Touch ID without a password. So this is something that they are using as kind of a soft sort of like not two-factor identification, but at least something that isn't just entering words or type into a browser, which is very interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm excited about things like this because I feel like, to some extent, we're moving into a future with a lot more AI. And after reading some of Anne Leckie's books about ancillary justice, ancillary shield, all that sort of thing, you know, I'm much more excited about the idea of having someone I can just talk to and have them do things. And to the extent that we have these discrete advances, I think these are very limited, but it also gives you a sense of how easy it will be, hopefully, in the future to do things.
And maybe it's the old man in me talking, but, you know, when someone invoices me on PayPal, I'm probably not going to pay them back through Siri. I'm probably not going to pick up the phone and say, you know, send that $800 to the sync company. But for informal stuff, like the pizza example, I could absolutely see this being a regular occurrence. That sort of thing seems to be more of a Venmo area right now, and maybe this is
more
this
is them getting into millennial money.
Absolutely. All right.
Speaking of the millennials and the apps that they like to use, Android Police says the most recent beta of WhatsApp includes a protection mechanism against clone phones hijacking your accounts. WhatsApp refers to it as two-step verification. When enabled, WhatsApp will prompt you for a 6-digit static password when registering your phone number with WhatsApp. An email address will be used to reset the passcode if forgotten. The system prevents WhatsApp from being activated with the same phone number unless the passcode is entered.
So, you know, this is not the normal two-factor authentication you think of, where you log in with your password and then put in a separate code from your phone device. This is specifically to prevent someone who has cloned your phone number getting access to WhatsApp. This is not a situation most users of WhatsApp are going to encounter in their daily life, that someone has actually cloned the phone and trying to get access to their communications. But WhatsApp also, you know, long before others were starting to implement it, was doing end-to-end encryption. So WhatsApp trying to stay on the edge of, we can make your messaging as secure as possible.
This is also kind of the future of messaging as a platform, which I think has cooled a little bit from the rowdy go-go days probably 3 or 4 years ago, but certainly is very big in Asia and in other emerging countries where there's not a tremendous infrastructure for stuff like transferring money and stuff like that. This is something that they need to do. This is, security is something that they have always taken very seriously, and it's heartening to see that they are still thinking in this world about how to do that most effectively.
So the idea is, if someone were to gain access to your phone account, maybe they do a little social engineering, and they've got a cloned phone, and they install WhatsApp, and they put in your credentials, and they're like, ha, I've got access to your WhatsApp account, this will pop up a prompt for a 6-digit password. If you don't know that password, the only way to recover it is to have it sent to an email address that you're under control. So to hack in, they'd not only have to clone your phone number, but they would also have to hack into your email. Chris, is this something, I don't even know if you use WhatsApp at all, but is this something that you are concerned with?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about all of this. And I think that those of us who were concerned about the implications of government spying when Obama was in office, or many of us are more concerned now. And so I'm glad to see more of this. But for me, the problem has always been, you know, whether I'm using Signal or whether I'm using WhatsApp or anything else, is that we can't all agree on anything. And, you know, sort of the issue of standardization and being able to be cross-platform and secure, which is quite possibly not going to happen.
Adobe announced Thursday it's getting into competition with the big boys in advertising. It will buy video advertisement company TubeMogul for $540 million. Adobe plans to include the ad buying platform in its digital marketing unit. That unit currently offers customers things like analytics and social media management, and now it'll allow you to buy some video ads and place them in various places. This will put Adobe, as I mentioned, in competition with Google, Facebook, and Twitter in the video ad space.
Kind of wonder why TubeMogul was not snapped up by one of these. I do not know enough about this story to say whether or not this is a high price for TubeMogul, and that maybe it was just too rich for the blood of Facebook. You would think this is a natural buy for either of them that are so right now invested in finding every inch of that online ad sales market.
Yeah, I look at it and I think maybe Facebook, Google, even Twitter didn't feel like they needed TubeMogul, and they just they knew they could outcompete it. So rather than buy it for tech or for employees, they hoped for it to just kind of fold and maybe pick it up as a bargain. And what Adobe has done is say, hey, it got to be a bargain enough for us that we're going to add it to our move into this space.
And listen, when everybody and their mom wants to get into video content these days, from the old and stodgy to the new upstarts, it is not a bad bet to make. On Wednesday, Twitter announced that Chief Operating Officer Adam Bain is stepping down and Anthony Noto will add the COO responsibilities to his current CFO title. Twitter will look for a new CFO in the meantime. Bain resigned September 7th, but will stick around transition. He joined Twitter from 2010, and Noto joined Twitter from Goldman Sachs.
So you broke up a little bit there, but it's November 7th he resigned, and he came over from Twitter in 2010. Noto joined Twitter in 2014 from Goldman Sachs. I'm not sure what to make of this, to be honest. It does seem like a little bit of cleaning house. You think if you're getting into live the way Twitter is, you want somebody from Fox Interactive, but maybe what they're saying is, I'm sorry, Mr. Bain, but you are not doing the deals that we need, and we're going to find somebody who can.
I mean, that's the tale of Twitter, right? You know, that they are just not where they need to be, and they are in constant flux for it. It does not shock me that people under the top leadership are now starting to slough off. And you got to just, I mean, again, this has been the story of the year for 2016 in tech, is just what will happen to this company.
Well, it's also interesting. I mean, how many people do they have now doing dual jobs? You know, is it to be a top executive there, you have to have multiple jobs at this point?
Yeah, right. Exactly. The cost-saving maneuver, just double people up. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them on dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. And in fact, our main story today came from the folks there. Thanks for submitting and voting. So Colorado has a law called SB 152. It was passed back in 2005 that says, in the interest of statewide uniformity of regulation, cable, telecom, and advanced service, 256K broadband is what they define as advanced service, cannot be provided by a local government, either directly through a joint venture or even a leaseback arrangement, unless you meet one of the following criteria. Now, the first criteria is there's no commercial operator providing the kind of service you want to provide within the boundaries of your municipality. Could be a city, could be a county. An incumbent has been asked in writing and no service agreement has been reached in 60 days. Or if there was an agreement, no service has commenced being provided in 14 months. The other way you can get around this is to have the voters opt out. So the voters would have to approve a ballot initiative to opt out of the state law and say, no, we do want our local government to provide this service. Before today, 69 municipalities had done so. And then as of this past Tuesday, 26 more, so bringing the total to 95, have added or have opted out of this law. That includes most recently places like Aspen and Golden, Colorado, which you may know from beer commercials. the other interesting thing here is all 26 passed by an average of 76% yes votes. The lowest was about 55%. The highest was around 85%. But most of them were in the high 70s. Whether they're a traditionally conservative or liberal area doesn't seem to matter. It looks, Chris, like people definitively would like their local governments to provide broadband service for them.
Well, that might be a little bit too strong of a statement. I think the way I would interpret it is that they want their local governments to be involved. So before a local government can even make plans, they have to basically pass this, because otherwise you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars developing plans for something you're not allowed to do. So what we see is local governments passing this and then contemplating a partnership, building their own network, is doing some very interesting things like Steamboat Springs, where they have made a low-cost investment to basically bypass the telephone company that had the only route outside of town, so that you have basically a little carrier hotel in this community so that they could have some competitive choice for getting out of town on fiber, basically. There's all kinds of things that are happening, frankly. It's incredibly exciting. And the interesting thing is, when you say municipalities, it's worth noting some of those are actually counties. And so 45% of the counties in Colorado have opted out, and some of them are doing pretty interesting things, even in very rural areas.
So this is something that I'm very, very interested in, because I have always seen these situations and thought, well, there's obviously a corporate protectionist oligopoly when it comes to providers, right? And very often that comes by way of making it very expensive for any prospective competitor to come in and put any kind of physical thing down in the ground. It's made many people think that the only way that you're going to get real competition is if there's some sort of new over-the-air sort of providers. So in general, although I've thought that municipal internet is, you know, kind of underwhelming at times, this seems like a way that cities are trying, even though oftentimes they're the ones that are being protectionist, to kind of break their own stranglehold on this kind of development.
Well, you know, it's so complicated. There's so many different ways to respond. I've seen a lot of arguments that cities are the problem. And when you trace back those arguments, they almost always come from the incumbents and the groups that the incumbents fund. We call them sometimes coin-operated think tanks that put out these papers, and they have economists attached to them. But local governments don't control polls in most situations. The polls are controlled by either the electric company or the telephone company. Electric company doesn't want anyone to bother them, so they make it difficult to get on the polls to put fiber up. The telephone company doesn't want anyone to compete with them, and so they make it very difficult. What's interesting is, even if they don't own the polls, they have attachments on the polls, which sometimes have to be moved for a new company to come in. This is the biggest issue that Google Fiber had dealt with. And then they can delay it 30 days, 60 days. You can just drag it out. And so local governments are generally blamed for this because it's happening in the right of way, but it's not something that local governments can really control. Now, local governments can have bad permitting policies. They can charge, you know, too much. They may have an onerous or they might be claimed that they have an onerous franchising. Some do. Most don't, in my opinion. I think local governments are generally scapegoated by incumbents who are looking for any excuse not to do this. And that's why we see around the country so many local governments trying to figure out how to bring competition, because they haven't found any other way of doing it.
Do those... go ahead, Justin.
Well, let me just ask this one. I mean, how much do you think the success of municipal broadband over the last, let's say, 5 or 10 years has made this something that local governments want to spend political capital to promote and push?
Well, I think a lot. I mean, I think, you know, so when you talk about municipal broadband, most people think about Chattanooga, and Chattanooga is an incredible story. And there's others that are just really great, like Sandy, Oregon, and a number of others that have showed up in more local issues. Like if you're in a state, you're more likely to know about them than you are someone else that's successful. But really, I think Google Fiber, I give Google Fiber credit for this, because I think it's not about just municipal networks. They're trying to figure out how to get a gigabit. They want to have much better internet service. They want to have competition and that sort of thing. And I think for many of them, municipal broadband is their last choice. I actually think it tends to work out well enough that local governments should be getting involved prior to it being their last option. But fundamentally, local governments they just really don't want to get into this. So it tends to be their last option. I think it's driven by a sense of, you have local businesses and residents that are saying, we need something better. We're frustrated, especially local businesses that are about to leave town because they can't get good enough services. So that's why most local governments get into it. But I think there's so many benefits when they do it right. We try to educate them and get it higher on their priority list. So, you know, I could tell you it's amazing and everyone should do it. That's not what we say. But the reality is most local governments do it because they feel like they don't have any other choices at that point.
And I think that's the key for me, because W. Scottis One in the chat room says, this is my, you know, libertarian leaning, but I don't want the government involved in this. The problem is the government has been involved in it for 20 to 30 years, so it's a mess. And I think that's what's interesting to watch happen here, is because maybe they had some franchise agreements back in the 80s when cable was coming in, and they put in some restrictions, they made it difficult to put in the right of way. And then the companies that own the poles, as Chris was just describing, don't want people either messing with their equipment or competing with them. And so they make it difficult. And then 21 different states have put in laws after advocates from ISPs like Comcast and Quest and AT&T said, we don't want municipalities competing with us. So there are laws to make it difficult for governments to get in. And so it's very confusing because the government is involved by saying you can't do this. The government is involved by regulating the right of way. And yet, with all of that being confusing and a lot of opportunities for FUD, you've got 75% of Colorado citizens in most cases saying, you know what? You're not doing anything to improve the problem. We're not getting the internet connectivity we would like. We need it for our businesses. We need it for our schools. We need it for our homes. So, yes, let's let the government try to figure out. Let's free the government to figure out the best way to do this. And when it's voter approved, when you've got the community behind it like that, then it's not the government doing it. It's the community getting involved in it.
Well, and it's also hard to make the argument that introducing any kind of competition has not made the actors that are currently in that city better and more responsive to the community. When Google Fiber came in, if there's one thing, and listen, it took Google lighting a gigantic pile of money on fire, and obviously it has not shown the return for them because they are scaling down that program and trying to figure out what they're going to do with it going forward. But at the same time, the results are there. Every Comcast got better. AT&T got better. The speeds got faster and the prices got lower. If you look at Chattanooga, which in the last 10 years has microwaved themselves into an East Coast Austin in terms of being a hub for, you know, culture and youth and entrepreneurship, the results there, when it's done well, has shown that it is worth the time and money. And I am certainly somebody that, like W. Scott, is one, has more of a libertarian bent in terms of understanding what the government should be spending their coin on.
Right, and you're not alone in that. I mean, if I actually thought local governments would be able to run existing carriers out of business, I would not support it. You know, I really don't like Comcast and AT&T, but these local governments are basically making them work for their money. They're not at a risk of driving them out of business. You know, I just wanted to note that, you know, we say we don't want government involved. Well, let's think about that for a second. AT&T owns a bunch of poles. If AT&T can do whatever it wants, ain't nobody going to get on those poles. So government has to be involved if we want competition. And I think the question is how it should be involved. The federal level, I don't want them building networks. I agree. I'd like to see them doing some antitrust to try and break up monopolies and things like that. You know, at the state level, frankly, it may be a little bit of middle mile connecting towns, but not doing residential or business services. At the local level, I think different communities should make different choices. You know, my community, I wouldn't necessarily wanting them trying to do what Chattanooga did, but Huntsville built out this fiber network and it's open to multiple carriers, including Google, which has had this partnership with them. That model is really taking off more and more. And I think that a lot of libertarians even support that, where local government is doing the infrastructure and then allowing independent providers to compete over it.
And even in Korea, what they did was not provide the infrastructure, but just made the rules so that you couldn't stop someone else from rolling it out. And in many places, you'll have in a building three or four fiber operators running redundant cable into that building to compete with each other, but they made the rules such that it was viable for them to do that. And when you have laws that say the government can't even get involved in that, they can't lease back, they can't regulate, they can't do anything to encourage it, all you're doing is reducing competition.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's always going to be some kind of rules. And the question is always, are we going to have good rules for, and if so, good rules for who? And we want to see good rules for those of us that want access.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting looking at the Google Fiber situation and how a company with that much cash and that much influence is now transitioning from we're going to roll out fiber to cities to we're going to investigate wireless backhaul, which is better for multi-unit dwellings.
Yes, and AT&T is doing that. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And, you know, some people have claimed Google Fiber is sort of folding up shop and going home. I think it's confused. You know, and the other thing is that they're not going to wireless, which has sometimes been reported, because they recognize there is no wireless product for single-family homes that will be competitive with cable. And I would say that I don't see that on the horizon either. So the question is, if even Google, with all of its resources, towards a good business case competing with Comcast in these cities. Well, then who's going to do it? Because I think we all agree that we want to see some kind of investment. And that's where I think, you know, cities can do it. And that may not even mean building fiber, frankly. Lincoln, Nebraska, incredible system of conduits leading to a local provider being able to do fiber to the home. There's frankly a variety of things, and local governments should be picking something that fits well with their culture, with their situation. And then hopefully, I think some these companies like Ting, Google Fiber, and others will be looking for more cities to be leasing assets from. So cities should be creating those assets today. And if they can't find someone to lease them, well, then they can figure out how to become a service provider themselves if that's something they later decide to do.
Yeah, even if you live in a smaller community, maybe especially if you live in a smaller community, you might want to get involved with the local government to say, hey, what can we do to make this happen? Remember, it's there's 39 states. Well, wait, no, that's 29 states that don't have any laws on the books preventing you from doing that.
Right. And even, well, just briefly, even those states that have barriers, they're not insurmountable in all cases. There's smart people that want to do something can find a way to make smart investments to make life better.
All right, real quickly, a couple messages before we get out of here. We have one person who wanted to remind us and the rest of the DTNS audience that as the holidays approach, it's a good time to donate to Child's Play through one of our writer's favorite fundraisers, Desert Bus for Hope at desertbus.org. This is the 10th year and promises to be one of the best. Of course, Desert Bus is the game where you just have to keep your hand on the controller to keep the bus from going off the road as it drives between Arizona and Las Vegas. It's from an old Penn and Teller game. But yeah.
Sega CD. Yeah. Sega CD. Penn and Teller's Sega CD game. You are going real time, and the bus will always, I believe, list to the left or the right.
Yeah, I can't remember which direction
you need to be. You need to be constantly adjusting. And of course, when you make that trip, you get 1 point.
Yeah. So thank you, Ken Hill. Keep an eye out for it, desertbus.org. Josh wrote in and said, I wanted to share a very interesting discussion I managed to overhear when I was going to see Dr. Strange this weekend. The Google Pixel ad came up on the screen at the theater, and the wife of the couple sitting next to me exclaimed, that's a pretty phone. What device is that? To which the husband said, oh, that's a Samsung Galaxy. As the ad closed and it said, the phone was made by Google, she asked him the same thing, and he said, it's a Samsung Galaxy made by Google. Just wanted to share that experience with you. Samsung and Android are pretty synonymous for most folk, and I expect Android to maybe be impacted with this whole Note fiasco. I know it's probably old news, but it was a really funny conversation. So, yeah, it could have things with the Note conversation, but also just in general, and people think Android is Android. It's all Samsung to them, I guess.
And listen, remember, this was the big worry for Google, that Samsung at its peak probably 2 or 3 years ago was going to fork Android into their own operating system that they would brand by themselves. This was a huge worry for them, and one that has seeming to have metaphorically and physically gone up in smoke.
And then Key wrote in and said, I live about 3 hours north of Sydney, Australia, and the two stores that had the Nintendo Classic Mini in stock, Target and Big W, advertised them to go on sale on November 10th. They sold out within 10 minutes and 30 minutes, respectively, Target being the smaller store. I'm now seeing them being resold for at least 3 times their value on the internet. I'm hoping Nintendo restocks soon and doesn't make this scarce. Thought that might be of interest. That Nintendo,
you know,
Classic
I gotta wonder. Yeah, I gotta wonder what the market for nostalgia consoles is, because I have to say I would be interested. I might subscribe to your newsletter.
Yeah, and they're just gonna get more and more, right? Because we're starting to move into the era when the consoles proliferated and competed, and so there's just even more nostalgia to be had.
I'm just gonna go home and play Bomberman.
Nice.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like every generation has its nostalgia trip. And for, you know, people that are a little older than us, if all they ever wanted to do was buy that first car that they ever bought that they felt was so good or that they coveted when they were 16 or 17, maybe we will all recreate our youth. And I will be buying a retro Sega Genesis playing Altered Beast well into the night.
Well, Chris Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us today. If people want to find out more, maybe they want to talk to their local officials and they want to be armed with a little information, where should they go to brush up on municipal networks?
Yeah, muninetworks.org. Videos, fact sheets, reports, all kinds of stuff.
check it out. MUNI Networks.
And Twitter at Community Nets.
Excellent. Thank you again for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Justin Robert Young, what do you got going on before we get out of here?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, I think I might be a little plugged out, but I can say that you can still go to thecontender.us and use offer code election if you would like to get free shipping over the next day or so. We're leaving that open just so some stragglers can get in there. And make sure you sign up for our mailing list. We're going to have some great Black Friday deals coming up in the next few weeks.
Excellent. Thank you to every single person who supports this show. It's why we do it, because you want us to. DailyTechNewsShow.com/support is the place to go if you want to know how to do that. You can find out all kinds of information from Bitcoin donation to PayPal to store where we sell some mugs and t-shirts and things like that. And of course, the main way we support the show is Patreon.com/DTNS. Thanks to David Bailey, who just joined the group of folks who support us. Welcome him amongst you. All of you who support us, we thank you very much. Patreon.com/DTNS. Again, Roger Cheng putting together our best of show. If you have a segment that you remember from this year that you're like, that was the one, that's got to be in that best of show, let us know at bit.ly/bestofDTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. We're off tomorrow for Veterans Day in the U.S., so check out Daily Tech headlines for the news, and then we'll see you Monday with Veronica Belmont. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
All right. Good show.
Cool. Have a good one.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. And anytime you got any telecom chatting you want to do, let me know.
We'll do. Good to have you back. All right.
Take care.
Take care.
All right, guys, I'm actually going to have to duck out early here, too, because I'm crashing my my friend's hotel room down here in downtown Austin. So I will see you guys later.
Sounds good. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon. Have a safe trip.
All right. Peace out. Will do.
Showbot.tv, if you want to take a look at the headlines. And Roger's going to jump back in here in a second. Vend me some glasses. Siri us money.
Hey, can you hear me now?
I can.
Top of the list is Vend Me Some Glasses, followed up by Siri Us Money. Third comes with, Oh, What Tangled Laws We Weave When We First Protect ISPs. The Spectacle of Snapchat follows up. Then we have The Glasses Snapful. Colorado Votes for Right to Lay Cable. That's expensive. That's an expensive pizza. YouTube is daydreaming. I think we used that before. The pole dance. It's clever.
I feel like that's come up before. I don't know if we used it though.
Municipal rules. IS pole dance. ISP pole dance. It's more clever when you read it than when you say it.
Yeah, maybe.
Choo choo internet. Daydream believe VR. We've done that one before.
Come
I think.
And ride the train.
I do like Dark Redeemer's Oh, What Tangled Laws We Weave When We First Protect ISPs, but that might be too long.
It's super long. It is definitely the best of what we got here, though.
Yes. What if we changed the pole dance to Colorado's pole dance? Not feeling it?
No.
Siri is now your PayPal. Ad Obi from Fred. Get it? Ad Obi, like Adobe, except that it's the D is capitalized. No, nothing.
No.
All right, why don't we just take out O and just leave it as What Tangled Laws We Weave? We'll reduce it by two.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave. Can you really get away without the O?
Okay. When we protect. What if we took out first when we protect ISPs? I'm just trying to find a way to be less character count heavy. Oh, what tangled laws we weave for ISPs is a variation of his. What do you think of that one?
That's a variation from W. Scott is One. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, what tangled laws we weave for ISPs. Yeah, I like that. Let's do that.
All right. Thank you. Scottus One.
Dark Redeemer and W. Scottus One with the assist. That has been chosen. And now I wait for level 8.
Oh, everyone's doing a little rhyming.
What else is going on, Roger? Apparently, Ashley Esqueda did try to stand in line to get the spectacles, but they ran out of stock, and then apparently they restocked later. If I could have got there right when everyone was leaving the line because they were out of stock, could have swooped in.
What do I got going on? I don't know. Honestly, I'm still asleep. I still have a little sleep deprivation, so my cognitive functions are a little slow.
Why are you not sleeping? Is it the baby?
Yeah, she's been not sleeping well ever since Tuesday.
The baby has been not sleeping well since Tuesday? So that's,
well, Tuesday
that's
night,
just a coincidence.
It is, but no, I'm not saying it's because. I'm just saying it started on Tuesday. It's been off and on for a bunch of weeks, but like starting Tuesday, it's been pretty like, I'm trying to figure out if it's more teething issues, if it's the heat, because it's been unseasonably warm in San Francisco for November. Typically, you get your Indian summer around October, sometime in October, and it starts to cool measurably like mid-November, and it hasn't yet. And I don't mean freezing, but just noticeably cooler, and it's still roasting in my place.
Yeah, it got up to 90 here yesterday.
Ah!
You have air conditioning at your new place that you're moving into?
Yes.
All right, good.
I got to figure where I got to replace the filter on it. They have it ducting into the same duct as the central heat, which is weird. So it literally goes into the side of the heater. The vent.
That's not that unusual. I think we had that in my house growing up.
Until the raccoon got in, and then there was just fur all summer.
Fur flew all summer long.
Illinois.
Illinoisy. I'm not sending it. Some people are trying to troubleshoot the sync issue, but there's nothing to be done. Oh, no, that's not going to work. Get rid of that. Oh, yeah. So this is good video.
No, I'm just reading like why Trump won and all the other stuff.
Why are you doing that to yourself? Nobody
because
knows.
It's on Twitter, the other just social
stop.
Network.
Just stop. It's you're just confusing yourself because
I'm not confused. I'm just warm and uncomfortable.
Everyone's got a theory.
That's totally it. I've counted 10 so far. I mean, granted, they're all variations on similar concepts. I mean, I have my own theory, but I won't divulge it because I'll get a lot of people angry.
Coming round the train.
I like to make people angry. Make my parents angry. Make my wife angry. Used to make my teachers angry. Especially when I corrected them. And I usually was right, so it's not like it.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, well, you know, back then there was no Google or Wikipedia, so... Oh, school seems like such a long time ago, but I remember it. I remember sitting in that stupid room next to the boiler room for drafting. And it was already hot in the summer, and none of the rooms have air conditioning because they were all built in the 50s. So you have to open the window. So it would be like 90 outside, but since you're next to the giant boiler for the water, and they never turn that off in the summer, it gets like 115. And I'm trying to like do drafting. It's like, I just want to sleep. It's the worst room to be in.
Which room
is it? I love drafting. It's just I can't work when it's oppressively hot. Can't work when
that was in high school?
Yeah. Print drafting. T-squares and...
So you don't have air conditioning in your house now, huh?
In San Francisco now. Yeah. San Francisco. You just open the windows and eventually the time will shift.
I don't think we ever had air conditioning. We might have had air conditioning in one of the places we lived, actually. In San Francisco. But we had it in Oakland and we had it in San Rafael. But it does get a little warmer in Oakland and San Rafael. So it makes more sense.
Well, you know, it gets hot in San Francisco for maybe a month and a half.
Yeah.
Or used to. Now it's just...
We lived out in the Outer Sunset, so even when it would get hot somewhere in San Francisco, it was rarely hot out there.
Yeah.
Undermined is saying he was also a person with a hot, an oppressively hot drafting room in high school. We didn't have air conditioning in our high school.
I wish we did.
But we... I mean... It would start to get hot in May, and they'd have to open windows, and they had these smaller windows, and mostly I was very worried about heat in high school.
The only rooms that had air conditioning were the ones they wheeled in, the ones that are like basically look like mobile homes.
Oh, yeah.
They had their own ACs. I had Mrs. Roberts. She was great. She was my English teacher. She was from Missouri, so she had a really thick accent.
Thick accent. What kind of accent did she have coming from Missouri?
It's kind of a southern. She came from southern Missouri.
She was from southern Missouri then.
So it had a very twangy southern accent.
That's sort of unusual. Not terribly unusual, but yeah, she must have been down Cape Girardeau towards Arkansas probably.
Well, you know, I don't know if when she says she's from Missouri, if she was born and raised there or just was from somewhere else and just was there and then...
Yeah, my Aunt Betty has a thick southern accent because she's from Alabama, but she lives in Missouri now and she's lived there for a long time.
You know, that's the one thing I was surprised at how mild the accent was, at least in Little Rock, Arkansas. I was expecting a thicker, but you know, that could totally be a class regional thing. Like if you go out into further,
it's pretty uniform in those areas though. Cause where I grew up, we didn't think we had an accent, but we did. And I started to realize that when I started working radio when I was 16, and I realized when I listened to myself back, I'm like, oh, I have an accent. It's almost Southern. Because it starts to just shade into it as you get Southern Illinois, Southern Missouri, Arkansas, Kentucky.
What I noticed is like, just like the people I've worked with, like people in technical or higher white collar jobs, but it's very muted. And it's only when they get excited or they're being, you know, they're talking about a big game or something, does it kind of come out. So I'm not sure if that's just a conscious effort to tone it down.
Yeah, I worked very hard to rid myself of my accent. Although, let's see, do I have it here? I don't think I have it here.
So Dano? Dano, I thought the plebiscite was was voted against or canceled. Wasn't the plebiscite canceled? I don't know. Every time I follow Australian news.
Oh,
the plebiscite on gay marriage.
Speaking of accents.
Yeah, you know, again, that's one of those things. In the cities, it was pretty easy. But like once you get to up into the thicker ends or the more rural ends of Queensland, it
was thick. Let's see if you can hear this. This is me in 1986. I've played this before.
Thank you. Thank you. This is only my first day, and listen to that applause. All right. Don Merritt here with you on WGEL, the best country in the country. All right. Right now, I see we've got Marie Osmond and Alabama due up this hour, but first, we have these very, very important messages.
Oh, you sound, it's interesting because I think you sort of had an accent when I first met you. But what I find really interesting about that is just how young you sound. Like
I'm 16 years old there too, right? That makes a big difference. I got distracted.
Quality content.
Thank you. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. We're off. Okay. I feel like that's probably the right episode. And it's
you sound southern, but you sound.
And I think
young.
Maybe Facebook, Google, I did in 14.
You can hear the 80s of that clip.
Well, it's also hard to make the argument.
You can hear the 80s in that clip. Yeah.
Some strange mix of California and Colorado. What's a Colorado accent?
It's country. Yeah. No, JPEG nailed it. It's a country kind of twang. Makes you want to say yeehaw. I don't know that I had an accent when you met me, except maybe a little bit of a Texas accent because I'd lived in Texas for 6 years before that. When I started doing radio, I tried very hard to be like, okay, I am going to pronounce every letter the way it is in fact supposed to be pronounced. To try to get rid of, you know, dropping R's and all that sort of stuff.
But isn't that do Southerners really drop their R's? Or is that just a regional thing?
Yes, it's a regional Southern thing.
Well, no, I'm just thinking like, maybe I just know too many people from the South who speak, pronounce their R's.
And that's the interesting thing, right? In Austin, when I lived there, I didn't feel like people had accents around me because their accents were more mild, but you'd get out into the country and you'd get that country twang. And so, when you say it's regional, I think I know what you mean. Like there are city folk in the South who don't have as strong of an accent.
Yes, exactly.
But that's more of an urban versus rural thing, I think. And then there's transplants too, right? Like people who move there from somewhere else.
Like rural Californians don't know, maybe to me because I lived there for a while, don't have a noticeable accent. Although Latinos in California do. They speak with a very noticeable dialect and tone in their voice.
JPEG is totally nailing it. He's like, Tom sounded like someone on a rural farmers network. Which was exactly what it was. It was a rural farmers radio station, and we did the farm reports and the Chicago Board of Trade market openings,
Pardica.
Corn prices, all of that stuff.
Pardica.
I don't know if I could actually do the accent that I had in that clip anymore. Is the thing, like I could probably pretend to do it, but it really wouldn't be the same. It would be me pretending to do it. Occasionally, if I call my friends back in Greenville, I'll start to slip back into it because they're speaking with that bit of accent. Yeah, that station's still around. WScottis1, go to WGEL.com. Best country in the country. Still kicking it. In fact, I went there the other day because I was looking for Bond County election results to see who won the local elections there.
See if anyone from high school.
Well, my sister works in the circuit clerk's court now.
You ever do that? Try to figure out what happened to everyone from high school? I have some morbid curiosity.
Not everyone, no. I mean, I see them. I went through that phase on Facebook where a bunch of people from high school started to reconnect and we'd have brief conversations. Oh, what are you up to now? Well, what are you up to now?
Trying to forget high school.
No.
Say the station again. I didn't catch it.
Well, JPEG says, I'm in New York City, but I happen to have a rural farmer's channel on my Fios I checked out for a second. You must have absorbed it very well. You recognized it.
Yeah, we had a farm report. It was kind of weird. The first time I moved to Modesto, the first time I ever saw a farm report. But you had to wake up really early, or like 5 or 6 yep. to catch it.
Yeah, you always put them on early in the day. And then you'd have the market close. The Chicago, you know, pork bellies and all that sort of thing.
And it was the only time I ever remember, and I think it's because some of the stations just cut their signal after 12, right? It ended at 12 midnight. It was the first time I ever saw like a closing where you have the, like, they play
God Bless America.
God Bless America. And they would have the flag waving.
Yep. Yep.
Thanks for watching this today's
WGEL
program.
Has reached the end of its broadcast day. WGEL operates with an effective radiate power of 3,000 watts from studios located at 310 West Main Avenue in Greenville, Illinois. Our studio-to-transmitter link call sign is WLD716. Join us again tomorrow for the very best in radio entertainment.
So wait, so what happened after? It just went off?
Then I would push two buttons over on the transmitter and bring the transmitter offline. Turn it off.
Like in, I know some stations, and I think this holds true, but at night you actually have to decrease the radio or the transmission power, right? Because it's usually because there's less interference.
Oh, yeah. We would just reduce it all the way. We didn't have a license to broadcast. You know what? I think we had a 24-hour license. I think it was our owner just wanted to save the money, so we'd bring it down at midnight. But yeah, some stations would reduce power at night. You're right. KMOX was a 50,000-watt station, so at night you could get it, you know, way over in Nebraska, down in Texas.
Clear across the county.
It was a clear channel.
Yeah, but it's also flat land, right? Pretty flat from that southern.
Yeah, I mean, you got
Illinois.
The Ozark Mountains blocking you to the west. You know, there's some hills here and there. It's
some divots, ruts.
I mean, it's flat in and around. There's some, you know, southern Missouri is pretty mountainous. Ozarky.
Like, I could get Stockton radio stations pretty easily all the way from Modesto, and that's quite a distance. And it overlaps several local stations, and it's just because it's, you know, relatively flat, straight shot down the Central Valley. You get the signal.
Yeah. I think those clear channels worked better in like the 60s because. By the time I was a kid, or by the time I went to college, I could pick up KMOX on a good night in Champaign, Illinois, which was, you know, only in Illinois. But I couldn't pick it up all the
quality
time.
Quality content.
Although
but
when
in
I was
law,
up, sometimes
Chattanooga
I would pick up WLS out of Chicago, you know, so, and that was another clear channel.
What the hell is this? McKeel Carter? Rhodes graduation order invoice?
What are you talking about?
Remember how I get emails for other people, but now I got this one from, this is another Austin's Processing Center email.
Oh, so you're getting someone else's invoice.
Yeah, this is their cap and gown. They bought the senior pack.
Ooh.
Wow, they're total.
Going amazing. All out.
Wow. That's a lot more money than I spent at graduation.
All right. I am going to bring our broadcast day to an end. An effective radiate power of 0 watts. Thank goodness for the internet. I guess we're an effective radiate power of whatever your Wi-Fi router has, if you're listening that way. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll join you again tomorrow for the very best in internet entertainment.